This Texas Matters podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, minutes from execution, Patrick Murphy gets a stay because of religious freedom, a death row interview with the Texas 7 member. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Patrick Murphy was ready to die on March 28th, and the state of Texas was ready to kill him. It was the U.S. Supreme Court that stepped in that day and granted the surprise execution stay. That's why Murphy is alive today. The High Court granted the last-minute appeal for the Texas 7 member and said the Texas Department of Criminal Justice violated his religious rights by refusing him a Buddhist chaplain in the execution chamber with him. Texas had a practice of allowing Christian or Muslim advisors in the death chamber. The Supreme Court ruled that barring the Buddhist advisor was religious discrimination and violated the Constitution. The court said either Texas allows all the religions or none in the death chamber, and the prison system's response is that now no religious advisors will be allowed in the death chamber during the execution. Most other states do not allow clergy in the death chamber. Murphy is on death row for his role in the Texas 7 escape. In 2000, the group of Texas inmates managed to slip out of a maximum state prison. While on the run, they committed numerous robberies and killed an Irving police officer, Aubrey Hawkins, while they were stealing guns from a sporting goods store on Christmas Eve. Murphy said he did not participate directly in the killing of Hawkins. He was convicted and sentenced to death under the controversial law of parties. I spoke with Patrick Murphy at the Polunsky Unit in Livingston, Texas, which is about 40 miles east of Huntsville. During the interview, he is sitting in a caged booth behind thick glass. We were able to speak to each other through telephone handsets.
You were scheduled for execution. When did you find out that the Supreme Court had stepped in?
Well, I did not actually know it was the Supreme Court until the next day. I found out about 8:20, 8:15, and somewhere in that area that I had a stay.
But like, how long before you were expected to be executed?
Well, the execution is scheduled to start at 6 o'clock, so I did not find out until 2 hours later.
So where were you that whole time?
I was in what they called a death house, which is the old death row from 1954.
Right, so this is in the Walls
yes,
unit,
sir.
And they have the death chamber, and then they have a couple of cells that are adjacent
right.
to it. And you were in that location, and you were expected to be brought into the death chamber,
yes,
right?
Sir.
Time's ticking away.
Well, you know, at 6 o'clock, or just a few minutes before, when the witnesses, the official witnesses didn't show up and everything, and I wasn't taken to the chamber, well, I knew that we were still waiting on the courts, because they won't actually take us into the death chamber until all your legal actions are finished. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I knew we still had something in the courts at that time, but then it was just a waiting game, you know, waiting to see what happens. And then, like I said, about 8:15 or 8:20, the assistant warden walked in, came through the door, and said I had a stay. So that was technically, because the death warrant is good until midnight that night, so that was actually like 4 hours before the expiration.
What was it like not knowing what was going on, that uncertainty?
Really, I mean, it really wasn't that bad, okay? Because when I went into the death house, I was fully prepared for death, okay? I was mentally, emotionally, and spiritually prepared to die. So up until that point, I was pretty calm, pretty level, up until he came in and said I gotta stay.
And then how did you react when you told him, told you that?
Well, my first reaction was that I kind of covered my face like with my hands like so, and turned. I said, "Oh, thank you." And I turned, and I did weep a little bit. And then after that, my emotional state was pretty much turmoil. You know, I was kind of in shock, you know, because I really wasn't expecting it.
What was the demeanor of the warden when he told you that you had to stay? Was it just a straightforward matter of fact?
Just, you know, very straightforward matter of fact. The men who work the death house there at Huntsville are very professional, very professional, very respectful officers, and they take that job very seriously because they are dealing with death, and they try to be very respectful.
You were granted the stay because of a freedom of religion issue.
Yes, sir.
That you had requested that a Buddhist chaplain would be your spiritual advisor in the death chamber at the time of your execution, and then because that was denied, and the Supreme Court said this is a case of religious discrimination.
Yes, sir.
What does that mean to you?
Well, up until January or the 1st of February, I didn't even realize that this was an issue that could be brought up until there was the Alabama case where a Muslim prisoner wanted a Muslim minister in the death chamber. But the Supreme Court said they waited too long to file, basically what they were saying. And when my attorneys asked me if I wanted this filed, I'm like, certainly, I would like to have my minister present with me at that time. As far as the religious freedom and things like that, I think it's very important because, you know, Texas more or less prides itself at being part of the Bible Belt and being very, very religious state. So if they're going to recognize one religion, then I think they should recognize all the religions. And TDC does recognize in their chaplain's manual recognize something like 35 religious faiths in their chaplain's manual. So the state's already recognizing different faiths. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So for them to recognize that at that very important time of death, I think it's just as important there too.
So you said they should recognize all of them, and that's what the Supreme Court agrees with you on. Mm-hmm. That. And so the Supreme Court says it's got to be all or nothing. And so the state said, okay, it's going to be nothing. No religious advisors will be allowed in the death chamber from this point on. How does that strike you?
Well, again, I think right now, I think that there's a possibility of challenging that because I don't know what the word is, but the previous executions, Texas has almost, you know, 500 plus executions. They've always had a chaplain present, but all of a sudden, because a Texas 7 escapee wants a different chaplain, oh, we're not going to have that now. So I think that gives us another challenge. Now, don't get me wrong; these challenges about the religion, about the minister and stuff like that, aren't going to save my life. It just prolongs it.
Talk about how important it is for someone who is about to be executed, and you're an authority on that,
okay.
How important it is to have a religious advisor in the death chamber with them, not in a witness room, but actually in there and being able to like rest their hand on your leg, which I think is the custom, and to be praying with that individual, making physical contact with. How important is that as a person meets their final demise?
Well, I'm only going to speak from my viewpoint as a Buddhist, okay? And I'm not really up on all the aspects of Buddhism and death and with Buddhism, but in my particular sect of our belief of Buddhism is called Pure Land Buddhism, and we they practiced what they call Buddha recitation, which is reciting the Buddha's name. Okay, and we believe that at the time of death, if we can focus our attention, our meditative focus on the Buddha, it will help us transition to our next life. Okay, so therefore, you know, in my case, I feel that having my minister there with me at that time and helping me, because there's a chant, just repeat a repetitive chant that we do, and that chant's very simple. It's a Chinese. I have no idea what it means, but it's basically Om Ni To Fu, and Fu being the name of the Buddha in Chinese. And I don't know what the Om Ni To means, but the Fu means you're calling on the Buddha. Having my minister there would, leading me in this chant would help me to focus at that time and hopefully help my transition to my next life.
So the spiritual advisor will help you focus, have mental clarity about this process in this time of great anxiety, give you some sort of anchor into something to focus on with this chant, leading you in the chant.
Yes, sir.
This is something that is critical for you and your beliefs to help you get through this experience.
Yes, sir. I would say it's very critical in our Buddha, this particular Buddhism.
Now, if someone was a Christian, is a way for them to...
A good example or a good comparison would be like a Christian and his minister saying a prayer, or even a Catholic administering last rites would be a good comparison.
And that's an important part of what goes on.
Yes, sir. As far as Catholics go, Catholics are feel that last rites are very important.
Absolution of their sins, and trying to help them. So with the state taking away now, saying our response is we're going to cut them all off, do you think this is an unnecessary and almost a reactionary, cruel maneuver that the state is taking on? They could find another way to deal with this?
I do feel that it is very cruel and reactionary, because like I said, all of a sudden, you know, they have over 500 executions, and all of a sudden, because I want a little change here, they said no. So I really feel that it is reactionary to that. It could have very easily, the execution could have very easily came about, because they had enough officials there. They had several wardens, the director, other official witnesses, that they could have easily have walked my minister through a practice run, you know, walked him through a practice into the chamber, said, this is what's going to happen, you'll be standing here, you know, blah, blah, blah. And within a few minutes, it could have happened. Within 10 minutes, it could have been over with.
Well, the state policy is everyone inside the death chamber, as I'm sure you're aware of, has to be an employee of the Texas prison system.
Yes, sir.
And so they have people who are Christian ministers who are able to deal with all the different parts of the Christian faith, including Catholicism, and they have an imam who's able to deal with the same sort of issues with Islam.
Yes, sir.
Religions, but they don't have anyone who is a qualified employee of the Texas prison system who can provide that service.
Yes,
so
sir.
That was their rationale for saying we need to have a state employee, someone who's been thoroughly vetted, someone who has gone through all the training, and someone that we have complete and 100% trust in to be in the chamber at this time, who's not going to act out. Is there a way to thread the needle between both of these concerns?
I really think the concern about whether they've been vetted or whether they're going to act out, and I really don't think that's a big concern, because for one thing, because he was on the minister's list here at the prison, and he was qualified for minister's visits here, he was already vetted in one way. So, and plus he's been doing this for several years, about at least 5 or 6 years he's been visiting me. You know, so the state, you know, had plenty of time to look into his background. you know, as far as.
But he's not a stranger off the street.
He's not a complete stranger off the street. Yeah, he was just not an employee of the state. Yeah, their stance about not allowing any minister. Yeah.
Do you think that people in the state of Texas, they feel that this is one act of compassion that the state of Texas can, should provide?
I believe that it is an issue that Texans, the general population, could get behind for that viewpoint right there. Because I think, you know, I just can't imagine having, you know, somebody executed and denying them some type of religious consolation. Okay?
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, if we're going to be a state that believes in, who believes in Christianity and religion, but you're still going to deny it at that very crucial moment in a person's life, you know, that doesn't make any sense to me.
You can't get more crucial than the end of it.
Right.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. I'm speaking with death row inmate Patrick Murphy, a member of the Texas 7 prison gang. Recently, he was minutes from being executed when the Supreme Court stepped in over his religious freedom.
Can you talk a little bit about your journey, how you became a Buddhist?
Well, I've been locked up for 35 years as of last month, March, okay?
That's including your very first incarceration.
Yes,
and that was before the escape with the Texas 7.
Yes,
so you've had 35 years inside the prison system.
Inside the prison system, minus, what, 40-something days of the escape. When I was first locked up in 84, I found a copy of a book that was called We're All Doing Time by Bo Lozoff. And it's not necessarily a book about Buddhism, but in that book, he introduces meditation techniques and yoga, along with, you know, several other aspects of it. So I've always been interested in meditation during my 35 years of being locked up. And I also practiced yoga to some extent for several years. So when Texas decided to recognize other faiths, which was somewhere around, I'm not sure, 2007, 2008, something like that. I looked at the approved faiths that they were going to recognize and decided at that time I was just going to kind of investigate or maybe a little study of Buddhism, right? But as I looked more and more into it, and I took a couple of correspondence courses. And the more I learned about Buddhism, the more it appealed to me.
It spoke to you?
It does. I tell people like this, it's like, you know, I feel that I've totally messed up my life, okay? But with Buddhism gives me a second chance at a life, you know, my next life.
Through reincarnation?
Through reincarnation, yes, sir. Because they do believe in reincarnation. So that I found that very appealing to me.
You were in prison the first time for what?
In 1984, I was sentenced to prison for aggravated sexual assault.
Were you guilty?
Yes, sir. I was guilty.
So I see on your neck wooden beads. Is that a Buddhist?
Yes, sir. This is what they call, in many different faiths, they call it a mala. This is similar to like a rosary. I have 109 beads, except for the center bead. Is what they call a guru bead. Okay. How we use it in Buddhism is, I use this to kind of time myself during my meditations. Okay. I will, as I inhale, exhale, I move to one bead. For each breath I take, I do one bead. And that's 108 breaths around. And that takes me depending on how I'm breathing, and I don't try to regulate my breathing. It could be 20 minutes, it could be 30 minutes to do the one round. I try to meditate at least 30 minutes twice a day. So that's what I use my mala for.
Are you allowed to bring that in with you into the death chamber?
No, you're not allowed to carry anything of your personal property into the death chamber.
Even if it were a rosary or nothing?
No, sir.
Let's get to the law of parties, which is the legal framework that has been used to sentence you to death here in Texas. Now, when you were with the Texas Seven, and that Christmas Eve when Officer Aubrey Hawkins was gunned down by the gang, Texas Seven, what was your role in that?
I was a getaway driver. I was setting the actual gunfight, if you want to call it that, was in the back of the building in the loading dock area, and I was actually sitting out front in the parking lot.
At the Oshkosh in Irving.
So I was actually, you know, probably almost 100 yards away on the opposite side of the building.
Now, you were also had the job of listening to the police scanners, right? And you were able to hear that someone had been dispatched to the Auschwitz, right? And so what did you do when you heard that?
I just informed the guys that the dispatch had occurred, and that it, you know, at that point I was just warning them that it had occurred.
And that law enforcement was on its way.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Rivas. And so and he gave the order, we got to get out of here, right?
No, he was just waiting, you know, if I seen the responding officer, I was to tell people to get out. And when I did see the responding officer, I did just at I told him to abort. We had all agreed ahead of time that if I said abort, that means get the heck out of there.
Yeah. And everyone was wearing like wireless radios to keep contact?
Little cheap walkie-talkies.
You saw the arrival of Officer Aubrey Hawkins.
Yes, sir.
And then you said abort.
Yes, sir.
And your expectation was you guys were going to flee the scene without interactions with the officer?
That's exactly what I thought was going to happen.
What happened?
They did not flee scene. They stayed behind. The next step in the plan was that George Rivas, who was dressed in a security guard uniform, was to approach the officer while he was still in the vehicle, and then try to throw down on him and take control of the officer.
So he was going to try to approach him, win his trust, and then grab him, and then y'all were going to restrain him?
We were going to restrain him and leave him, put him inside the back seat of his own car. That was the plan.
Instead, Officer Aubrey Hawkins went for his weapon?
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you that. Gunshots were fired. And the officer was shot, I think, 11 times.
And Rivas was also
Rivas
shot?
Was shot twice. Randy Halpern was shot once. Having helped administer first aid to both cases, I think the possibility that Rivas was shot by
one of the guys, one of the Texas Seven.
I think that possibility was very slim. Because I looked at, because one of Rivas's wounds was in the stomach area, right? And myself and Newberry sewed him up, put four stitches, two on two. And those wounds did not look like it'd be like a 38 special or a 357 Magnum. It looked smaller.
But all that is in dispute. No one really,
right.
Some people say he was shot by
friendly fire.
In the confusion.
Yes. Most of the people say it was the court wants to say it was from friendly fire.
And so then y'all fled the scene and y'all went on the hideout. And what did you think was going to be the outcome? So when y'all broke out of the Connolly unit, did y'all really think y'all were going to be able to fade into the backdrop of society and get away with it?
there was a good possibility, not as a group, but if we had eventually planning to split up, I think it could have been the possibility that some of us could have faded into the background. You know, not all of us, but some of us could have.
And then after the shootout, what did y'all think was going to, what your fate was after that?
Well, from then on, it was, personally, I knew from then on it was just a matter of time. Because there was no way that Texas would have let us fade into the background after that. You know, we would have been on, what was it, you know, 5 weeks on America's Most Wanted. You
know? Back to the law of parties, in the version of events that have been brought out by all of the participants in the Texas 7, you were not a gunman. You did not fire a weapon?
I did not fire a weapon while I wasn't present. And see, I wasn't present. We did not plan for a murder or killing to occur. And I did not give the order for it to occur. Understand what I'm saying?
Right. So that seems to be the issue.
Yes, sir.
Is whether in Texas, this is what's being talked about, if the death penalty should apply under the law of parties, and if not the death penalty, then life in prison, reserving the death penalty and executions for the worst of the worst and people who have actually have killed someone.
Yes, sir.
So do you think that you should have life in prison and not be executed?
Yeah, I think life in prison. Yes, I do feel I would deserve life in prison. You know, because I'm not challenging my guilt in the crime. I'm just challenging the sentence.
And you would be that person would be in general population in a security maximum security prison, and they would live out their remaining days.
Yes, sir.
In that circumstance.
Or in my case, because the escape, I would probably be spending the rest of my life in ADSEG.
That's administrative segregation, which is like solitary.
Yes, basically where I'm at right now.
What do you want people to know about you?
It's not necessarily what I want people to know about me, okay? I would like to express to my profound regret in actual death of Aubrey Hawkins. I am sorry, I do regret that he was killed, okay, in such a manner. But I also want to remind people that Aubrey Hawkins died in the line of duty. And for those who wear the uniform, whether in law enforcement or military, to die in the line of duty is more or less an honor. Understand what I'm saying? It is an honorable death. And we should remember that about Aubrey Hawkins.
He's a hero.
He's more or less a hero. But he died a heroic death. Yeah. And I like I said, I regret my involvement in that. Okay. Thank you.
Patrick Murphy is a Texas death row inmate. He was a member of the Texas 7 prison escape. And he recently was minutes from being executed when the U.S. Supreme Court granted a stay over his religious freedom. Murphy wanted a Buddhist advisor with him in the death chamber, a practice that was available to Christian and Muslim prisoners. After that court ruling, the Texas prison system reacted by banning all religious advisors in the death chamber. A new death warrant must be issued for Murphy for him to return to the execution chamber. That could happen in several months or in several years. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can listen to past Texas Matters programs, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.